Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of this program. Should you want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. Walker, Ray, and now Steve Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
What do you got, Walker?
Yes, our Share-a-thon. Seems like we just finished Share-a-thon, which we did a few months ago. We had it about a month late. But our fall Share-a-thon is coming up.
In October?
It is in October. Each Share-a-thon, we have the listener testimonies that we like to play on the air. And basically what we do here is we play listener testimonies of those, anyone out there listening to American Family Radio that have had their lives positively impacted by American Family Radio. And so we'll play your testimony on the air leading up to Share-a-thon in order to encourage our listeners. Here's the number to call in. You're going to call into this number and leave a 1 to 2 minute voicemail at this number, and then we'll take that audio and turn it into a listener testimony. So here's the number to call in and leave your listener testimony. 877-876-8893. 877-876-8893 to call in and leave your listener testimony.
All right, Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Hey, about 30 minutes ago, President Trump announced what he is calling an historic peace agreement between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, calling it the normalization, full normalization of relationships between the two countries. Spoke with Jan Markell, and we spoke with David Rubin, who's former mayor of Shiloh, I believe, an expert on Israel. And Rubin says this is indeed a big deal. So what they are saying, full normalizations of relations between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. The statement says the diplomatic breakthrough was at the request of President Trump, that Israel will, quote, suspend declaring sovereignty over areas outlined in the president's vision for peace, and focus its efforts now on expanding ties with other countries in the Arab and Muslim world. This could be huge.
Walker.
All right, and moving on.
Yeah. I was waiting on.
I was distracted.
Yeah.
I only heard half of what Steve said.
Yeah, no, this is a big deal because Israel has a hard time. Really, other countries have a hard time getting along with Israel there in the Middle East. So any normalized relationships, and of course that doesn't mean they have to agree on everything, they're two separate countries, but any type of whether you want to call it an alliance or an agreement, some way to normalize relationships where you can do trade and other kinds of deals with another country around Israel. I know Egypt and Saudi Arabia have kind of normalized their relationships with Israel, so adding another country to the list over there in the Middle East is good for Israel.
The average Arab who live in countries that surround Israel don't want war with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of Arabs that live in Israel. What, 20%, Ray?
Right.
20%
right.
of the Israeli population made of Arabs. Do you agree with me on that, Ray?
Well, if you just talk to the Arabs who are trying to build their families and provide security and trying to get economic security and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Every time there's a war, it just sets everything back in the Middle East. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see what Iran has to say about this, because that's, you know, they've been the wild card, the unstable part of the Middle East for the last few years. So what are they going to say about it? Steve, have the Iranians made any comment on this yet?
I've not seen any comment from the Iranians yet. Although, it's very possible, I think, that the world community, the UN, if they see this as a possible solution to a broader peace in the Middle East, could just kind of set Iran aside if they don't want to play ball. I mean, they're left out in the cold. I don't see why they have to you know, other than the fact that they could have warplanes that could launch a war.
Well, let me ask a follow-up question to the agreement that you mentioned, that you said the Israelis will no longer claim sovereignty over what additional territory is that?
Well, we're trying to figure this one out. What they referenced was the president's vision for peace and prosperity. That's President Trump's vision that he set out last year, 2 years ago, for peace in the Middle East. And it has, and I tried to read through it. I couldn't get through the whole thing because this is still really breaking. But it has allowed for Israel, in view of its own security, to continue to annex property and land that would, if they didn't own it, would put them at risk. The Golan Heights, for example, up in the northern part of Israel, Tim, I'm sure you guys have been there. If an enemy of Israel were to occupy the high ground there, then that spells real trouble for Israel. So the agreement that President Trump was working on would have Israel maintain its security. I think what they're talking about here, and this is not, I don't have this verified, but suspending declaring sovereignty over areas outlined in the president's vision for peace would be annexing parts of the West Bank. I don't believe that anybody would agree, or Israel and the United States would agree, to actually giving back any of the settlements that they've made in the West Bank.
Yeah, let me clarify what I said earlier. I said the average Arab in the Middle East does not want war with Israel. That's what I mean. I'm not saying that they're going to have picnics together, okay? Right. The Saudis are going to break bread on the border with Israel and have some kind of celebration. I'm just saying that because of the strength of Israel, the power of Israel militarily and otherwise, I think that's one of the reasons. The other reason is what Ray mentioned, that most Arabs in that part of the world are just like us. They just want to live their lives and make a living, feed their children, and and those kinds of things. You do have your Hezbollah. You got your Hamas. Those are two terrorist organizations that want to kill every Jew and drive Israel into the sea. So that is real. That does exist. But I'm just saying that's not the feelings of the majority of people.
Yeah, I think this is a smart move by Israel, because this is further isolating Iran, as Steve mentioned early on. This is further isolating Iran, where you keep building these agreements, where these basically peace agreements, where the two countries will get along for the most part. Then you're going to eventually have Iran all by themselves in the Middle East.
I know we could talk about this at length, but I've never understood logically, outside of religion, what Iran cares what Israel does.
Well, they're driven. They're driven by. They're a Muslim.
Yeah, but they're 1,000 miles away. So Iran hates Israel more than anybody else. They're always talking about the great Satan and the little Satan, and they use this to gin up hatred for Israel. They're not on.
That's what their religion teaches.
They're not on their border. That's what I'm getting at. They're not on their border. Israel and Iran don't border each other. They don't. So they're not in dispute. They're not. In fact, the Arabs in Israel are Sunni for the most part. Right, Ray? Is that right?
That's right.
And the Iranians are Shia. Is that
right?
I got that right too. Right.
Right. That's
and then you, so those people view each other as heretics. And you've also got the fact that the Muslims in Israel and that part of the world are Arabs, and the Iranians are Persian. So the only explanation here is that Iran uses Israel as their whipping boy, so to speak, to gin up support from other Muslims, via Shia or Sunni, who hate Israel and hate Jews. Ray, you got any? I don't want to spend more time on this than we need to, but you got any more? You got any other explanation for why Iran cares about Israel so much?
Well, they are driven by fanatical ideology. It's not as if the UAE is not Muslim. It is, but it's also the richest part of.
Are we talking about Middle Dubai?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you're talking. There's a lot of money there, right? There's a lot of money, and the folks in the UAE can set some of that ideology aside because it's much in their benefit to have relative peace in the Middle East. And if that means making relative peace with Israel, I think that's a smart business move.
Right.
And that explains why the UAE is doing what they're doing. And the mullahs and the others in Iran, they are driven by that fanatical ideology.
Hey, Ray, I've got a question for you, Ray. By the way, CNN is reporting as part of the deal, Israel will suspend plans to annex parts of the West Bank.
Okay.
Now, Ray, is there something in prophecy about the end times, about peace breaking out in the Middle East? I, in the back of my mind, there is, but I don't know where it falls in the timeline.
Well,
we got 14 minutes, Ray. Go.
Sorry. I know I don't want to take
up
the whole time with this if you don't want to. But
let me give the 20-second answer. Yes, there's going to be a kind of peace for a few years in the Middle East because the end time ruler we call the Antichrist is going to arise, and he is going to guarantee peace for the nation of Israel for at least a 7-year period that we call the tribulation. So yes. Yes, I think the peace is, and only God knows how far or how close we are to those end time events, but the pieces are in place. They're moving in place, Steve, just like the Bible predicts.
Wow.
Next story, Steve.
Other breaking news out of Tennessee. Tennessee is concerned about its children. This just happened within the last 2 hours. Tennessee concerned about the children in its state that are not going to school and their well-being. So the Tennessee Governor Bill Lee has tasked Education Commissioner Dr. Penny Schwinn to establish child well-being task forces. Their job is to check in on every child in person in their home once a month to ensure that their well-being is being taken care of.
How can you do that when you're supposed to be practicing social distancing?
Well, I don't know, but it scares me when the government decides it's going to send a welfare officer into my home
for no reason
other than that my kid can't go to school. To me,
sure about that? Where are you reading this?
This is off of the website of the State of Tennessee Department of Education. Well-being checks, regaining and maintaining connection. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee tasked Education Commissioner Dr. Penny Schwinn to establish the Child Well-Being Task Force with the goal of ensuring the needs of Tennessee children are met during and after extended periods away from school. One of the charges of the task force was to establish a guidance document to ensure all children are checked in on, identifying needs and developing a plan to respond to those needs. The superintendent or designee for each LEA, which is their district, will participate in monthly child well-being calls and will report on the condition rate of child well-being checks for children zoned within their district.
Oh, he's a Republican.
Yeah, but these things never go away. They never rescind these things, and they're going to have a Democrat or an authoritarian government at some point.
Boy, has our country changed
in a matter of
7 months. We got now government welfare checks at random for no reason other than the welfare check. I mean, that's what the Department of Child and Protective Services is for when you get a specified and factual complaint on an issue. Instead of random walk-ins or knocks, like you got police doing search warrants.
I don't think that's even doable.
Well, yeah, and it's definitely not. There's no legal authority.
How in the world?
How are they going to have enough people?
That's what I'm saying. How are you going to have enough people and enough time to visit every home for an in-home visit for people?
Really, if anything, this is the job. This would fall under the purview of a teacher, not for an in-home visit, but if you want to do a phone call to the parent to see if there's anything the school can do to help the child learn better, then
I'm going to allow for me to be educated more on this issue. I know Steve's giving us a outlay of it there, but let's withhold complete judgment until we find out is it exactly how we're interpreting it? How about that?
Good deal.
Because that doesn't sound right, especially for a Republican governor in a conservative state. I just don't see how that that would go over well. Go ahead, Steve.
All right. The debate on masks continues to roll through the country.
Really?
I've got two different perspectives on this. We've got a county in, in Wisconsin, and it is saying, a state agency actually, is telling its employees that they have to wear masks during Zoom calls, even if they're home alone. They have to wear masks.
No, that must be Babylon Bee you're reading from.
It's not. This is from Fox News.
Oh, man.
Yeah, a Wisconsin state agency is reportedly mandating that its employees wear face masks during video conferences, even if they're home alone. In a July 31 email, the Department of Natural Resources Secretary Preston Cole reminded employees that the governor's mask order, which requires anyone over age 4 to wear a mask or face covering while indoors, is to take effect August 1st.
I got nothing.
On the other hand, let me introduce you to Marion County, Florida Sheriff Billy Woods, who has instructed his employees not to wear face masks while on duty. He says this is no longer a debate, nor is it up for discussion. No masks in Marion County, Florida.
Wow. You mean if you work in the sheriff's office?
If you're an employee, if you're a private citizen, you can do what you want. But if you're an employee of the citizen of the sheriff's office, take the mask off.
All right. Two completely different approaches.
It is, isn't it?
So when do we see COVID go away now that all of America's wearing masks? Well, you know, Hawaii's been wearing masks for 6 months, and now they're about to be the new hotspot.
Yeah.
Walker, do you not believe in science?
I believe in science that says that masks don't work.
Huh?
Yes, I believe in science, the science that says that masks don't work.
How do masks not work? I'm going to let you dive in here.
Yeah, well,
the phone calls and emails.
You mean pull up the 7 studies that have been written over the past 10 years about how masks don't prevent the spread of upper respiratory illnesses?
Okay.
We'll post the links to the studies on the Facebook page. People can read for themselves.
What I've heard, the logic of it is that when you wear a mask, it's almost impossible for you to wear a mask and not touch or adjust or somehow physically handle the mask while it's on your face.
Americans don't know how to wear masks for the most part.
I suppose, but they
can't. I don't either.
They can't. Every time I put a mask on, I'm pinching the nose to make sure it's there, or I'm pulling it up or down or whatever. Yeah. Every time you touch it.
With our dirty hands.
Every time you touch it, the medicine says, the science says, if you want to make sure that it's still good, you have to wash your hands thoroughly every time you touch it for 2 minutes.
Well, I was reading about cloth masks. You know, a lot of people are wearing cloth masks and how they were saying that I was reading studies Ray had found that cloth masks, you have to wash them every day because what happens is they, all right, just stop right there, Tim. Anyway, I'm going to get too deep into this and I don't understand it very well.
They don't stay clean or something, right?
Yeah, it's just, anyway, listen, I know that.
We're taking the easy way out of all these subjects. We're just saying, well, we just don't know much about it. So
that's the way you do it, Walker. I've learned. I'm 57 years old, and, you know, trust me, follow my lead on this one. You walk.
Scratch the surface and move on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, go ahead, Dr. Walker.
No, I'm just going to
take the face mask argument away. It's all yours.
No, you were heading towards a good thought there.
I was heading toward a good thought, and that is this. When they compare doctors and nurses wearing masks and they say, why do you think they wear masks? You know what I'm saying? As if that's supposed to be applicable to the general public.
Right.
The doctors and nurses are working in sterile environments, right?
Correct.
And they're mostly wearing these masks to keep, not for the air they breathe, but to keep, although that may be part of it, but you don't want things splashed on you.
Right.
Right? So to compare that to just a healthy people walking around everywhere in general public wearing masks, you know what I'm saying? That doesn't seem comparable.
Right. The traditional wearing of masks is done by medical professionals for a very short period of the time. You know, you walk into a dentist walks in to see a patient and they put on a clean mask out of a sterile wrapper, and then when they're done with that patient, then they discharge of that mask and get a new
people aren't doing that
fresh mask on, so on and so forth. Surgeries, The doctor completely washes all the way up to the elbows, goes into a sterile environment, and then after the surgery, they discharge of everything, and then for the next surgery, they put on clean everything else. But what you're seeing is you're seeing people wear the same mask, the cloth mask you're talking about, for a week.
It's down around their neck.
2 weeks, 3 weeks without washing it, and it's getting all kind of bacteria built up.
Yeah. I think people are wearing the mask and I did have someone I know who said that what they do to prove a point about, I shouldn't even say this, about the mask is they'll say to somebody, yeah, I think we need three masks. And then
what?
That person, huh? Three masks.
Like one over the top of each other?
Yeah. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
No.
Huh. Yeah. Well, why not?
Extra filtration.
One is awful enough.
Why not?
That's why not. One is awful.
Okay, but the point is, if one, why not two?
One is awful, two is awfuler, and three is awfulest.
Okay, but listen. There are people who wear face masks, and I will if I'm required to, and I want to go in a store.
Sure.
We talked about this before.
Right.
I'm not mocking or making fun of people who wear face masks who want to wear face masks. But what you're saying, Walker, is that in terms of upper respiratory viruses, face masks are not stopping that. Is that what you're saying? Is that
correct?
Is that what you're saying? The science shows.
That's what the science shows.
What are you referencing?
COVID. You want me to go through? I want you to put it
on Facebook so people can read it for themselves.
Brian Fisher, host of Focal Point, wrote an excellent article two weeks ago. And he cited the 7 to 8 studies that I'm talking about. So we'll just post Brian's article and people can read it for themselves. And in full disclosure, I wear a face mask where it's required because I like to get my groceries so I can eat.
You had to get on an airplane last week.
I had to fly. So if I want to fly somewhere, I put a mask on. But wearing it to comply with private businesses is one thing, but then saying it's works
mandatory
to stop
by the government.
Well, and to saying that it completely stops COVID spread
is entirely separate. Well, I don't think anybody says it completely stops it. They would tell you if you cough or sneeze on somebody, it stops it. That's what they would say to you. But
yeah,
all right, let's move on here.
Okay, so Tim, I just need to know before we get to the end of the program here. This mass stuff is interesting, but the really important question, are we going to have college football this fall?
Well,
we have not allowed enough time for this topic.
there can never be too much time to talk about.
I thought Steve
football.
Was mentioning Tennessee a while ago. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Tennessee's.
The SEC
the
volunteers.
Fans
yeah.
are saying,
that's really, right.
We will play football, or
yeah,
there'll be
okay.
war.
I saw a University of Nebraska, a Michigan player, take the University of Nebraska coach to task,
well,
and he needed to quit or apologize because he said they want to play.
Well, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have said no, they're not going to play football.
Yep.
The SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 has says at least right now we are going to play football starting sometime in the middle of September.
What a strange world we live in.
So
yes, it is.
So.
Okay, we can rest easy for
yes,
a moment.
Yes, I think. Well, we live in SEC country.
What's the college team in Kansas City?
We do, but Ray lives in Big 12 country. So
it's right, Kansas then, right?
Be playing football in your part of the country too.
That's right.
As it stands now, everything's fluid, right?
That's right.
With this pandemic, and I'm just so thankful that Joe Biden and Barack Obama stopped the Ebola pandemic.
Isn't that the case?
That's right.
According to Kamala Harris. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Take care.